to this week's podcast. My name is Joseph John of Ultimate Athlete Concepts, and I'm joined today with Jeff Moyer of DC Sports Training in Pittsburgh, as well as Dr. Michael Yeses, renowned biomechanist and expert in Soviet sports training. And today we're going to allow to kind of understand the background of Dr. Yeses over the course of the past 50, it's going on 60 years, Doc.
That's right.
Almost six decades now in the field, and someone who has the greatest wealth of knowledge in terms of the Soviet sports culture of anybody that speaks English by far, and the longest history thereof. So I think it's Dr. Yeses has such a unique perspective as having been exposed to a wealth of knowledge and being around a lot of the great scientists and coaches, and then also having his own academic background to be able to kind of understand it and then integrate those ideas and then from there improve upon some of them in his own work. So I think this is just a great opportunity for those who are interested in this background. You're going to learn a lot today because there's a lot that you may assume that may be not true, or you may, you learn something new, things maybe that you didn't even realize existed. And Jeff today is going to take the lead on the interview. He has a lot of interesting questions for Doc. So welcome, Dr. Yeses, Jeff. It's going to be a great opportunity to talk to you guys today. And Jeff, you go ahead and take it away.
Sure. All right. Well, I appreciate you guys both being here. And Doc, as always, it's a privilege to have you with us. And, what we wanted to do today, as Yeses said, is kind of look more into your background. I mean, you were once a lost coach, such as many of us, people see you now as an expert, but they don't fully understand or know your whole background and how you became, Dr. Michael Yeses, and how you learned what you know and stuff like that. So the idea for us today is kind of to learn a little more of the details. So if you wouldn't mind, Doc, where did you kind of start? I know, correct me if I'm wrong, college-wise, you went to school to be a phys ed teacher?
That's right.
Correct. And then from there, how did you kind of get into biomechanics and studying kinesiology? And, we'll just kind of start from there, Doc, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, sure. Now, one thing I should bring out that I've been involved in sports all my life. Now, I played in high school. I lettered, three sports in college. So I've been around sports all the time, very strong interest. So this is why originally I started out being an engineer. I went to a technical high school. It was, in fact, one of the top schools in New York City at that time, Brooklyn Technical High School. And I was studying to be an engineer. So, I have this scientific background. So all this time, and even through college, halfway through college, I decided, I'd love sports too much. I'm not going to be an engineer. I hate being cooped up inside. I got to be around some kind of a ball game. So this is where I switched to physical education. But I had all of the sciences behind me. So that was the beginning. And then after I got my degree, I did some teaching. I did some coaching on a high school level. Came in number two in New York City in the swim team. See, so, my background, from the swim team, and I coached tennis and coached other sports. And, there wasn't a sport I didn't do. Every time I would see a new sport, I had to try it. And so my background is very diverse. And as I got into the academic area, I started finding out that, hey, many of these sports have similarities to them. We use the same patterns in many different movements. So regardless of the sport that you're in, you still do some of the same things as someone else in another sport. So this started, dawning on me a little bit. But I didn't get serious in terms of studying the sports until I became a teacher and until I got my degree and started reading some of the Russian. And the Russian stuff happened by accident. It was during the Cold War. This is the beginning of the dominance of the Soviet Union for many years. And it was like, why are they so successful in sport? Nobody in the United States knew. We didn't know anything about them. Cold War. Oh, you can't find out anything about them. They don't know anything. Nobody knows anything. So I tried investigating. Went to the Library of Congress, found out a tremendous amount of Russian material. All in Russian, but it was available. It was in our libraries. So I got a couple of them. And just to show you how the times have changed, when they sent me a copy, it wasn't a digital copy or anything like this. It was actually photographs of every single page of the book.
Wow.
Actual photographs. That's where our technology was at that time. So anyway, make a long story short, I showed this to some of my professors, and they were intrigued with it. And when I showed them some of the articles, and I told them what it was about, they said, well, why don't you translate it? Let's see what that material, if it can stand up to scrutiny. And they gave me credit for it. They would give me credit for it. And that's what made me do it. And even though I had a background in Russian, my parents were Russian, I knew the language, but it was only the domestic language. I didn't know anything about, you know, the sports or the scientific terminology or vocabulary. I just knew everyday vocabulary. So I'll make a long story short, it was a horrendous task. I was looking up every other word because it was all scientific. But I had to do it because, hey, it was like taking a class. You have to do it. Make a long story short, the information was great. So they said, well, let's do some more. Let's find out more. And little by little, as I got into more and more of these translations, I started learning the language and the vocabulary and found out, hey, this is really great stuff. And I persevered with it mainly because of what I was learning. And additionally, even some of the professors. Anyway, I got my degree, PhD, and I continued with this. And many people were saying, well, gee, you have all this information. Make it available to everybody. So I didn't know anything about publishing. Everything was brand new to me. So I started a publication, the Yeses Translation Review. Figured that came the closest. Then kept going with that. Then little by little evolved, became the Soviet Sports Review. And then finally the Fitness and Sports Review. And I did this for 29 years. 4 volumes a year. Tremendous amount of information. And people who really want to learn about the Russians, I would really recommend they get these issues. Look at them. A lot of great stuff. Not only from the coaching techniques, but the training techniques, the theory, the practice in specific sports, and so on. And as I read them, I got to see quite a few of the Russians. I said, you know, there's some guys that really look like they're more expert. And this is where some of the names like Vereshchansky and Bondarchuk didn't come up at that time, even though I knew who he was. And I said, I headed a group of coaches over to the Soviet Union. This is back in 80, well, I did it twice, early 80s. And this was the first exposure anyone really had to the Russians. And even me, it was my first time there. I had been to the Soviet Union, but never with the coaches. And I got to know them, and we set up this exchange where coaches could learn. And it was dynamite. The only problem was the NSCA didn't want to continue it, or they wanted to do it on their own, and I won't go into all the nuances. But anyway, I'm maybe going off track here, but that's kind of a general idea of how I got into this with the Russians. But then I also pursued my academic career. And if I didn't have the academic career and sports background, there's no way in the world I would have been able to translate and understand the material. But with the background that I had, I was able to understand what they were talking about and even make heads or tails out of some of the vocabulary. So without my previous background, I never would have been able to do what I did. And even in my work, when I started using some of the Russian material, I put it into practice, started working more with athletes, and not just in my coaching. And as I did this, I began to learn more, and I did it in my classes. See, and the more I did, let's say, even technique analysis became one of my primary objectives because it fascinated me to know why does somebody do what they have to do in order to throw fast? What really makes up speed? See, and I got this from some of the Russian studies that I looked at. They were analyzing world-class performers. These were the best in the world. And they were saying how he could be better. Now, if only he had a little bit more explosive power in this one movement here, from here to here. And this was unheard of before. Yeah, I had biomechanics. I had biomechanics background. I would teach biomechanics. But in terms of his practical application, I was a neophyte in comparison to what the Russians were doing. But as I read the material, it took a while before the light bulb went on. Then I began to understand where they were coming from. And that's what really opened up the door for me. And I became more and more of an expert, I guess you could say, in this area. Really quite fascinating to know why and how. And then I also had to get into the training. So the uniqueness, and this is what I would recommend to most people, don't pigeonhole yourself into one area. Look at the broader scheme. I have a very strong background in biomechanics, where I look at technique analysis. But I also have a strong background in kinesiology, where I understand the muscles and the movements. And it helped that I was even teaching it. So with all of that, and then I understand exercises and training concepts. So you need the biomechanics, you need the kinesiology, and you need the training. What do you do with training? And the exercises. So all of these three is what enabled me to do what I've done. But without one of them, I wouldn't be as successful. So that's really the key to success and why you have to be a little broader. You can emphasize one area, but you have to be broader. I see too many young people coming in. You all have a strong background in physiology of exercise. Doesn't mean anything. Where's your technique? Your technique is the basis of everything. There are only two factors that determine success in sport. Your technique and the physical ability specific to the technique. So you can develop physical abilities all day long, but that doesn't mean you're going to be that much better. It's only a little bit. But with technique and the physical abilities, that's where you get your progress. And everything else stems around these two concepts, which we can get into a little bit later. Okay, I think I've talked enough for a while.
No, that's good. Now, with that, with your studying of the former Soviet sports sciences, were there particular influences, experts in the fields, let's say biomechanics, such as like Donskoy or Zatsyordsky, right, or anyone that you particularly, you know, studied and followed with the biomechanics and the technique analysis?
No, mainly. There was no one person that stood out that did everything. Like Donskoy was great when it came to track and field. And even he in track and field specialized in a high jump. Tremendous, you know, research that he did in a high jump. Other people were geared more for running. Vereshchansky, he was more in terms of some of the more theoretical concepts. And who developed, you know, he was a phenomenal person, there's no question about it, who developed the concept of the stretch shortening principle, you know, as well as the plyometrics. I should say the shock program. We have a wrong conception of plyometrics. So with this, I looked at many people. Each one had its own little niche. So there was no one person that I could kind of look up to, but... And here again, I took the information that they offered and incorporated it into my own thinking, my own knowledge. So either I could, you know, copy parts of it, or I would modify and change so it would fit my particular case. So it's a little bit different.
Okay.
See, and here's where the background comes in. You have to have the background knowledge to know, should I really do this or should I? Shouldn't I? What should I incorporate? How much should I incorporate? How does it fit? And so on.
Okay. No, they're fantastic. Now, within the technical analysis, one of the major things that you talk about in your work is identifying key movements, and then you come up with your specialized exercises for that. And I'm kind of curious, with the history of key movements, now, again, this is just a term, I know other coaches in the Soviet system used, same ideas, just used different terminology for it. Was this idea of key movements, was this accepted amongst coaches, all the, scientists and coaches? Was this just a few coaches that you learned this idea from? Where did the, in your background, where did you kind of learn about key movements or?
No, it's something that I came up with.
Okay.
See, there's been some recent research where people are getting into what are the key elements or leading movements. Mm-hmm. Like one movement, if you have this one movement, everything else will flow. Yeah. Well, when I looked at the different sports, I tried to figure out, okay, now what is the when it comes to speed in running, what is the main action that's going to contribute to speed? See, and this is where I identified three things. And it wasn't just me alone. I picked up a little bit, some of the research being done. I thank the Russians for this, where they did research, good biomechanical research, and they poo-pawed and said, hey, this whole thing of triple extension or using the hamstrings in a push-off is false. And they couldn't believe it for a while. They redid the study several times. They came up with the same results. The hamstring and glutes are not involved in a push-off. And once they realized this, then everything became understandable. Yeah, the glutes can't, or the hamstring can't be used because anatomically the body won't allow it. And on the film, when they did the analyses, it was a three-way analysis, EMG studies, cinematography, all combined, that there's flexion actually occurring. So how could the muscle be involved in actively pushing off when there's flexion occurring in a joint? And the muscle was relaxed. It was undergoing an eccentric contraction. So when I learned this, okay, then what is the main action? It was the calf, ankle joint extension. So that automatically resolved it for me. The key action we have to work on is ankle joint extension. And also the knee drive. The thrust of the forward leg coming forward. This became paramount. And not only did the leg come forward, but also coming back. And I read some research by them that showed that 80% of all of the energy expended by a runner was in driving the thigh forward and driving the thigh back. So thanks to their research, there was the answer. These two then became critical elements. You need the knee drive, you need the paw back, you need ankle extension. So these became the three key areas. You have to have these three if you want more speed. In hitting, well, we come up with the role of the hip joint. See, every sport has its key movement. And by doing the analysis of technique and figuring out, and this is what I recommend everyone do, what is the importance of each action? Once you understand the role that each action plays, you'll see if it's critical or not. See, like in hitting or throwing, not only is the initial movement forward important for weight shift, but the hip joint action. The hip, not only abduction, but also the hip rotation. This is critical to all the other movements. So then I came up with, this is the key action. Now, how do we improve that action? Now, how can I get more hip rotation? That's when I came up with the exercises with the active cords. We need the active cords to strengthen the muscles as they're involved in their rotation, and so on down the line into other actions. But that's kind of how I developed all of this, where I got little bits of pieces here and there, put it all together.
Okay. No, yeah, I know from speaking with Professor Mark Laddish, Penn State, who's an expert in the field of motor control, Natalia Verkhoshansky, they mentioned the work of Bernstein, Nikolai Bernstein, and his, according to Dr. Verkhoshansky, she mentions that Bernstein, in one of his non-English translated books, talks about a fuzzy word, which Professor Laddish clarified, but the role that each exercise has key movements. Natalia called these key movements, so it falls right in line with your work, which my question is, with your background and your studying of technical analysis from the Soviet system, where, from when you used to study it to now, has that field developed further? Has it kind of just stalemated as far as progress in studying, in your opinion? If you wouldn't mind expanding a little further, at least on that.
That's a tough one, Jeff, because I feel that there hasn't been much progress. See, and since the Soviet Union broke up, there has really been no progress, no new material coming out of the Soviet Union. Yeah, they're doing things now, but none that I've seen that I've been able to incorporate. So I kind of think, as I go along, I know every year I'm modifying and changing things. So I think perhaps I'm the one who maybe is changing and modifying things and looking at things differently and trying to make it better. I know I've done this in many sports now. Every year I modify and change a little bit about what I'm doing based on what I'm learning. And I think maybe the biggest area is the area of specialized strength exercises. See, this is a concept that has not permeated the United States yet. But yet it's critical to performance, especially a high-level performer. You have to couple technique. But see, you have to know technique first. That's why I said technique is so important. We can't ignore it. When you know the technique, then create an exercise that duplicates that one joint action in a technique, then you're going to improve the entire technique. And you can do each joint, depending upon which one needs improving. So this is what I've been doing in many different sports, creating the exercises that can be used to improve performance in every skill. And this is where I would hope there's going to be more attention paid to this area and more development of this concept, let alone using it.
Well, I would say, in the field right around now, there's starting to be, everything works in trends and what's trendy at the moment in the strength and conditioning field. And I'd say motor control, motor learning seem to be kind of catching on a little more, and coaches now talking about motor control and this and that. And I'm curious, with your background in movement sciences, we'll just call it movement sciences, in trying to improve movement, an athlete's movement, sports techniques, and from there, the role of motor control, one, and then I'd like to ask you more about motor learning, but motor control, again, this is now becoming more popular as everyone's starting to write about the different theories, dynamical systems theory, hierarchical approach, this and that. Just kind of curious, when you were studying motor or sports techniques, with coaches over in the former Soviet Union, were they concerned with motor control? Were the different theories brought up? And if so, how were they used? And yeah.
No, they were really beyond this. Okay. Most of them, like, for example, the teaching of skills was carried out in the schools. So by the time they got the athlete already had all of the basic skills. But in the U.S., we don't have that. Physical education is not teaching skills. Skill teaching is still in the dark ages in this country. And that's a crime. It's a crime because we're depriving and limiting the ability of our athletes to improve and become better, or even teaching skills. See, we still, you know, when we say this is developing, I don't really see it, Jeff. Maybe it's developing on a theoretical level, but not on a practical level. For example, all of our teaching. Now, I know you're involved a little bit with tennis. You work with many tennis players.
Yes, sir.
I can almost guarantee you, and you tell me if I'm wrong here, that when they first teach a young tennis player, somebody comes in, I want to learn tennis, I want to be a tennis player. All right, here's a ball, here's a racket. Now, drop the ball, hit the ball. See, in other words, we're teaching the hitting action. Because we think, well, they have to have success in doing it. But we don't teach body movement.
Correct.
So here they learn how to hit the ball any which way they can. Then we congratulate them if the ball goes over the net. But, you know, it's like even when I did supervised teaching of future teachers. You know, they would do a unit on tennis. Okay, you know, 1 week on forehand, or rather 1 day on forehand, 1 day on backhand, 1 day on serve, 1 day on strategy, next day let's play. So, yeah, they play, toss the ball up. Oh, I missed it. Toss the ball up. Oh, it was long. Point. Okay, see, I got a point. Let's change course. So very few good hits. But I won, teach. Give me credit. So I'm being facetious here in a way, but this kind of explains, you know, where is the motor learning? Where do I see it in action?
Yes,
we have to see more of this in the schools. Otherwise, where is it going to be taught? Where are the coaching clinics that teach this? See, so it's nice to have the theory. We need theory first, but we have to have the practical behind it.
Yes, sir. So would you say for a coach such as myself or other coaches that are listening to this that are trying to teach technique, would it be important then for them, in your opinion, to just have a basic understanding of the theories of motor control, or should they just not necessarily get themselves concerned with that and just kind of learn more about the technique and then motor learning?
Oh, no, no. You have to have the theory.
Okay.
You have to know what you're trying to achieve. What is the ultimate goal? But that's not overpowering. You know, you have to understand where you're going. You need a guideline in terms of your teaching. See, this is what the theory can do. It spells it out for you. You start here, you're going to end up here. And this is what you do in between. So we need all of this. But now we need the practical. How does it work?
Yes, sir.
This is great theory. But does it work in a practical situation? See, and this is what I've been doing over the years. And then you find out after experimentation. Well, let me try this. Let me try that. Let me try the other thing. And then we know.
Well, that kind of leads into my next question. Having gone out and spent time with you and watched firsthand you changing someone's throwing mechanics, you know, I'm amazed by your knowledge base in general, in biomechanics, physiology, everything. But the thing that most struck me when I went out and spent time with you is your ability to teach the technique. I was curious your background in studying motor learning and, you know, how did the Russians teach it? Did you learn a lot from their ability to teach technique, or was it more, you know, just did you pick it up pieces here and there in the United States and there, or is it just more trial and error with your own working? With, you know, the various theories of motor learning, you know, how did you come up with the way you teach and then utilize it in a practical setting?
Yeah. You know, it's a great question. I never even thought about it before. But all I can think of, I never really learned it from anyone. See, in the Russians, you know, what they taught, this was never spelled out, how they did the teaching. I didn't see anything on this. It was more in terms of what they were teaching, when, and what grades. You know, they were great for, hey, here's a curriculum for a third grade. This is what you teach in third grade. Here's what you teach in fourth grade, and so on. So you can see the reason for this is that I really understand technique. I've studied it so long and worked with so many athletes on their technique. I know what's involved. So when I looked at Troy and saw what he was doing, I knew what he had to do and how to change it. Now, I'm very familiar with how the body functions. So he had to change his release. He had to change this. So this is why I was capable of making these changes. And over the years, I've learned what has to be changed first. See, it's one thing to look at someone and say, oh, yeah, well, he's doing this wrong, this wrong, this wrong, this wrong. I don't do that anymore. I look at the main action that's missing. He's doing this wrong. Here's how we can fix it. See, now that is a tough thing in itself. It's easy for me to say that. If someone is doing this, well, you should do this. Well, you have to know not only how to do it, but what's involved here. See, and over the years of so many years of doing this, I've kind of refined it where I know, hey, this is what has to be done first. This is how to do it. See, the how-to comes later. You know, I wrote my book, Explosive Running, and I have a chapter in it called Troubleshooting. These are all the common errors you see in running. And then I come up with exercises on how you can change it, how you can improve it. Now, notice I said exercises. This is another key area. Many coaches will teach technique and say, this is what I want you to do. Go ahead and do it. I'll see you next week. How does the coach know himself or the athlete know what to do? He doesn't know what to do. He has to be shown what to do. And it has to be done over and over and over. Hundreds of repetitions sometimes. So this is where many people have to learn. And even the use of exercises. How many people even learn or know how to use an exercise to teach something? You have to learn this movement. Now you can do the sport. Now you can do the skill. So that's an art in itself.
Now, would you mind, I know this is probably a very long-winded answer, and again, if it takes too much time, don't worry about it, but and this could be a whole topic for another podcast, but would you mind giving an example? Let's say an athlete comes to you, or a cross-country runner, or a team sport athlete, doesn't matter, but they one of the mechanical faults you see, let's say, is they run on their heels. Would you mind giving an example, just a practical example for coaches listening of how you would work with that or change that?
Yeah, and that's a great example because I see many athletes who are heel hitters, and I have to change them. First thing I start off with, see, they're used to the heel hit, so I have to change that feeling. I want them to learn what it feels like to land on a ball of the foot. So I have them just landing on a ball of the foot, and this takes a while. I'm amazed at how many people don't know what it is to run on a ball of the foot or just jog. I won't say run because we don't do any running now. So just in place. Landing on a ball of the foot. Come on, let the heel down a little bit. Let the whole foot down. See, and as they get this feel, now can you feel? You feel a little springy now, see? And then once they get the feel for it, okay, let's move out with it. Then we go into a little bit of a jog. Very, very slow. Then they're jogging a little bit, mainly on the balls of the feet. See, and they let the whole foot down. Then I make sure as they're doing this jogging, now, come on, you got to bring that knee up a little bit. Don't just land on a foot. See, now they're learning a little bit of the knee drive. So they're getting a feel for that. And then I don't worry about poor back. Poor back is very hard to learn. And for most runners, I don't even have time for it. Depends upon where they are. So I don't even bother teaching it. Even though it's a critical element. But they'll have to rely on two of those movements out of the three. So once they get used to the jogging, okay, we have the knee drive coming in. And then I just start increasing the range of motion. So and then as they increase the range of motion, now we're getting into real running. And they're no longer heel hitters. They have to learn how to land ball heel or whole foot.
Okay, now do you have any kind of transition period? So let's say it's a football player that heel strikes. Do you just have them go out practicing, running midfoot, and then have them go right to a football practice and expect them to have changed, or do you have kind of a graduation transition type thing?
All right. It'll vary depending upon the athlete.
Okay.
But in general, it's going to take really hundreds, if not thousands, of repetitions before it's learned. So how long is that going to take? It'll vary. Some athletes can pick up these changes very quickly. Some athletes take much longer.
Okay.
But during this period where we're learning on this change in technique, there is no competing. You can't compete and at the same time be learning and changing technique. When you change technique, it has to be done without competition. So he's not going to be running. You're working on all of these elements. And gradually, after maybe a month, he's starting to run. And then we pick, and when we start running faster and so on. So, like that football player, sure, if this is done right after the season, when he doesn't have to worry about playing, it can work. If you're trying to do it a month before the season, forget it. It'll never work. So I don't do any change of technique in season. In season, all you do is fine-tuning. Hey, just a little bit higher over here. A little bit harder over here. A little bit more finger action. One little thing. That's all you can do in season.
Now, you have is there a certain amount of time that the athlete should then spend a day or in a training session just solely working on the technique? This is kind of a rhetorical question because I know the answer, but I find your opinions definitely very interesting. I've used it and I've seen it firsthand work, but it's a lot different than what a lot of sports coaches try to do. So I was just curious if you wouldn't mind, how long should they work practices and how many times a day until they, you mentioned the number of repetitions, but it shouldn't just be in one sitting, correct?
Oh, no. Impossible. Yeah, and that's another, really good question. What I have them do, let's say after we have a session, I bring out what the technique changes are. They have to repeat them enough, and I have them maybe repeat it 3 or 4 times during the session because we usually have other things that are involved also. So they learn what it is. Okay, we take a break from it, go on to something else, then we come back to it again. Okay, let me see you do that jogging again or, whatever we're working on. Then we do something else. Then we come back to it again. So then by the time he leaves, okay, now every day for the next week or two, all during the day, every time you think about this action, I want you to do it. See, for example, when they're learning how to execute a cutting action, I say, okay, I want you to do this maybe 20 times a day. 2 or 3 times at a time, they take a break, they're doing something. You're standing in line at the store. Come on, do your cutting action. People will think you're nuts, but that's all right. You're learning. Don't worry about what other people think. So, yes, at the beginning, you repeat it all the time. Then little by little, as they're getting it, and they become more accustomed to it and more familiar with it, they know what it feels like, then it gets cut down progressively. And then they can do more reps, but never to the point of fatigue. Anytime you're learning or making a change, you have to be very fresh and energetic. That's the key. So that's why it's got to be done often, but not continually. You've got to have the energy.
No, that's awesome. That's great advice. And I can tell you from using your methods and the way you teach, it certainly works. And I highly advise any of the coaches listening to this to use it for themselves. With trying to teach technique, don't spend a lot of time. Do it when they're fresh. Do something and then or work on it, and then come back. It's great. And now, Doc, I could literally sit here and ask you questions and pick your brain on technique analysis and motor learning, motor control. But I see that we're running out of time here. So, hopefully, to be continued. We can come back. Still have a lot more questions to ask. But it was great learning about. More in depth of your background and how you came up with some of the ideas and concepts that you use, and Yeah, Yosef, you've been quiet. Got any questions or comments for Doc?
No, you guys covered the waterfront pretty well. I think that maybe we come back and look at it again. One little point that I think bears mentioning, too, you find this, Jeff, I know you found this to be the case, too, is that when you use the different specialized exercises that Doc has developed, you find that they play a crucial role in technique development as well. If they're done properly, you know, at the right intensity and frequency, they help ingrain the motor pathway for good technique. I dare say in some cases, just as well as the practice on the technique itself too. It's kind of like they come together, the practice and then the exercises, which is practice in, I guess, in one way, but,
Yeah, let me interrupt you, because you got a great point there. When we do the specialized exercise, you're developing the strength of the muscles as they're needed to execute the technique. And you're actually enhancing the technique as you're learning the technique with the additional strength developed in exactly the way as it's used. So that's the beauty of it. That's why you get that double benefit.
Yeah, and so I think that the one thing that I think that Doc put together, and a lot of times people look at it, is overly simplistic, but I think it's it has elegant simplicity in the sense that you use a 1x20 method, for example, when you're using these exercises, especially at the younger levels, but even, you know, high school and college and pro, it's still effective. You find that you accomplish many different tasks with a 1x20 approach, but technique improvement is one of the vital ones. It also plays critical role in the development thereof. And I can see it with athletes, you know, after they've been training for so many months, you can see the technique and the sport actually just starts to, you know, develop,
right?
Almost, I would say, on its own. It's almost like it's on autopilot. But I think that was one brilliant kind of approach developing the exercises. Number one, looking at the 1x20 approach as the optimal kind of range of ingraining the motor pathway in combination with the technique development as a way of really bringing it up to the highest level possible. So, you know, a lot of people look at it as simplistic, but it's actually, I don't want to say complicated, but he took complicated ideas and distilled them into a distinctly user-friendly approach to not only develop a good technique, but also developing excellent performance at the same time, and injury-proofing and all these other ideas, because, you know, a lot of people don't realize that poor technique will also cause a lot of injuries. So you got all these different things going on at once that he was able to meld into one system that accomplished every goal that you want, every goal, and without giving up anything, without any negatives. So I think that was the brilliance of putting that together and how it relates to what you're talking about with motor learning and technique development. Really is undervalued, because it was definitely huge contribution to the field, being able to bring all those things together into one distinct little package, if you will. And everybody can use it. You don't need to be a genius to be able to take those ideas. You can read the book, put them right into practice right away, and see the improvement and the value of it in short order. It won't take very long at all. So I think that's one other thing that, you know, I just wanted to bring that out, because, you know, I've been doing this for over 20 years now, and yeah, we've seen that value time and time again. So,
Maybe before we end,
yeah,
we can pick up with it, because, yeah, I wanted to amplify what you said, because I think it's a critical element here, and it relates back to the motor learning that you were asking about. See, and I'll show you how the motor learning ties right in with the whole thing. That's really the basis of the 1x20. See, along with the strength. So we can get into that detail later, and I think it might be kind of fascinating.
Sure.
So we'll pick up again. Let's maybe we'll pick this up again in a shorter podcast to kind of go over some more of the little details and questions about this, about your background, Doc, and how you've integrated. I'd like to talk maybe just a little bit about some of the success stories. And the one that you guys were talking about, or, you know, you mentioned briefly earlier, I think would bear mentioning as well. And we kind of can go into those in a subsequent podcast. So we'll get together maybe here in the next week or two and do this again and kind of wrap it up and follow up on the different points that are still I think of keen interest to everyone. So I want to thank you, Doc, obviously, and Jeff for joining me today. I really appreciate both your time and expertise, and we'll look to get together here within the next few weeks again.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. This is Joseph Johnson signing off with Ultimate Athlete Concepts. If you have any more questions about any of the stuff you see here, you can email us at info@ultimateathleteconcepts.com. And if you have any questions specifically for Dr. Yeses at dryeses@dryeses.com. That's dryeses.com. And we'd be happy to point you in the right direction, or Doc can just answer the question for you. So we'll look to seeing you guys in a couple of weeks and talk to you soon.
Okay.
See you guys.
Thank you.
Right.